Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Liz Loza. Sitting next to me, as always, is Matt Harmon. And sitting next to him, as always, is producer Brett Rader. How are you, gents? How's your day?
I've wasted way too much of my day arguing with people that have disingenuous opinions about Michael Thomas on the internet today. So I've had a great day.
Michael Thomas, $100 million deal, record-breaking deal.
He's the highest paid the first ever non-quarterback offensive player to reach $100 million.
Yep.
Which, like, awesome. But, you know, it's one of the, you know, there's some things, Liz, where it's like, you shouldn't do this. You know you shouldn't tweet about it. You know you shouldn't get involved, because it's like, look, there's probably like a very small percentage of the population that believes this opinion, but the fact that there are even any humans that exist out there that think like, I mean, Michael Thomas is like an average player that's just a product of Drew Brees. That pisses me off so much that there's just even any humans out there that believe that. Like one tweet about it, it's like, oh, that's enough for me to like quote tweet dunk on
you. It's amazing that this is that which gets you so passionate given our world's current climate.
All right. I mean, Jesus Christ. Like, that's not the only thing I can get passionate about. It's just what we're talking about in the moment. Is this not a fantasy football podcast? Would you want it to? We were just talking about global warming a minute ago. You want to get back on that?
Matt's very upset about paper straws. They're failing him.
Yeah, he comes in today. He's got, I got another paper straw for my iced coffee. And then I just got,
coffee.
It's a cold brew.
To answer your question about how I'm doing, I'm depressed about the world because of his iced coffee today.
Did you go off campus to get that from Blue Bottle?
No, actually, I did not go to Blue Bottle. Blue Bottle, though, to their credit, they've got the good, like, plastic, just sip cup thing.
Oh, the good plastic.
Well, no, not plastic, paper. I'm sorry. Excuse me. So, like, the like hard paper tops that actually make it easier to
drink out
of.
I don't know. I stay at the office to work. I don't, like, go on field trips to coffee shops.
Well, every now—
Because there's coffee here.
Yeah, I do drink coffee here in the morning, but every now and again, it's nice to get away from the office when— I mean, I spend a lot more time in this office than you do, Liz, so, I mean,
I'm just saying.
For starting this podcast like that, that's how we're going to do it.
Michael Thomas is a great receiver. I would say he has even better agents. Athletes first, man. They are just making record-breaking deal after record-breaking deal. He's absolutely worth it. I mean, he was you charted it. You have the lovely graphic, but 85% catch rate, something ridiculous like that?
85% catch rate. I've tweeted, that's how I like got on this stupid subject this morning, was like in reception perception, you could argue that this was like the greatest season that I've ever collected. Number one, he has the best success rate versus man coverage that I've ever charted at 82%, chattering Odell Beckham's previous record in reception perception. He was awesome in like every other metric. So yeah, when I just quote tweeted that and was like, yeah, worth it or whatever. And of course, then there's a couple chuckleheads that want to jump in there like, oh, what would his numbers be like if he wasn't playing with Drew Brees? He's an average player. It's like, come, just, I can't.
One could also say that he is perhaps keeping Drew Brees' legacy afloat.
Yeah, like someone hit me with like, "Oh, look at his air yards per target this year." It's like maybe.
Oh, I love a nice air yards per target quote.
Yeah,
that's great. Nice ref.
Yeah, it's cute. Some other dude, and like, look again. No one cares about this, but it grinds my gears. Someone said like, I mean, look at how many other 12,000 yard receivers the Saints have churned out in the Drew Brees, Sean Payton era. I'm like, okay. Again, I know your point, but there's been three 12,000-yard wide receivers, not counting Jimmy Graham, in the Sean Payton, Drew Brees era. Two of them are Michael Thomas. The other one is Marcus Colston. If you don't want me to dunk on you on Twitter, don't make it so easy.
So, Matt, if you thought you were having a bad day, Green's day.
I'm having a great day.
His weeks out, 6 to 8 weeks with this left, not right. All the toe issues, by the way, on the right foot. Just want to note that. Left ankle, low sprain, clearly much more than a low sprain. There's ligament damage. There's cleanup. He's out six. I'm going to say he's out 6 to 8 weeks, right? Like, woof.
By the way, like, when I was waiting to do Fearless Forecast, you were going first, and you noted that in your Fearless Forecast for AJ Green, the right to left foot injury. Oh, I didn't know that. That was a really good point. I had not thought of that. I don't know if it makes a huge difference. He's still freaking injured, but it was one of the things that you said. I was like, oh, look at point.
Well, it makes me think that if he were to come back, because if you remember the right toe issue, he hurt it and then he came back like an Iron Man and tried to gut out the pain. And that was what really crushed it for him. Like he couldn't and had a setback. So my thought was in doing a projection, if he were to play the back half of the season, even at 31 years old, even in a theoretically new offense, not theoretically, like it is a new offense and he's been playing in the last one for a long time, right? So he could at least be semi-productive. I also just want to add that, like, I think it's interesting that there's these reports surfacing about the turf having been bad and that it was Tyler Boyd, in fact, who said the turf terrible.
He said literally we shouldn't have been out there.
Yeah, there were pebbles and stuff. So Robbie Gould did that. The kicker in Chicago honked at the Chicago Park District and got his butt traded shortly thereafter. But that's not going to happen to Tyler Boyd because of the lack of depth in this receiver core. Tyler Boyd also recently signed to a 4-year, $43 million extension. But you know, obviously, when A.J. Green is expected out, this brings into light and a discussion about Tyler Boyd's productivity.
Yeah.
Profiles as a slot receiver. I want to throw out some stats that were actually initially provided by my fellow White Claw enthusiast, Evan Silva. And he...
White Claws suck.
You're wrong.
They're not good, man.
You are wrong. You said the same thing about tequila.
No, I never said tequila sucks. I said...
No, you said you spit out the drink that you were drinking in New York because it was so bad. You poured it out when you drank the tequila and soda drink that I drink on the regular.
Oh, that has nothing to do with not liking tequila. That just has something to do with it was not a... I don't like tequila and soda. I like just tequila.
Got it.
Yeah, but White Claw's gross. Sorry, no, we just lost a sponsor.
I think it's great. I drink it on the regular and summer season. Anyway, thank you, Evan Silva, for the following information. He isolated, so a lot of this chatter has been like, well, Tyler Boyd's not as good when AJ Green's off the field. And you're looking at last season stats, except Driscoll was under center because Dalton was injured. And there's obviously a drop off in talent there. And please don't at me about like your Dalton hot takes. So Silva isolated the Dalton QB games. And this was what he tweeted. Boyd's yards per game fell from 77.5 with AJ Green on the field to 73.7 without him on the field per game touchdowns. And again, this is all Dalton led stats. So per game touchdowns from 0.63 with AJ Green to 0.33 without. He topped 100 yards in 3 of 8 games with Dalton and AJ Green and 0 of 3 with Dalton, but without AJ Green. And while this is useful, I should also note it by saying it's only a 3-game sample. So the data's not particularly useful. But you, I imagine, did chart Tyler Boyd, and using your methodology can illuminate all of this for us.
No, I think the thing that's interesting about this is it's one of those things. Yeah, it's a super small sample size for sure. But intuitively, this makes sense. This is my concern with any offense. Like a couple of years ago, many years ago now at this point, I wrote a piece for NFL.com about like why offenses struggle to run, like offenses that try to run through a slot receiver really struggle. And of course, everyone spits back with like, what about the Patriots? Well, they had Gronk and Moss alongside a slot receiver. Really the only offense that at the time I could find that ran through a slot receiver that was a good offense was the Seahawks with Doug Baldwin.
But you don't think Indianapolis, because they're using T.Y. Hilton as, I mean, he can do both inside and outside work.
There's only really been one year where Hilton was used as like a 50%+ slot receiver. And I think that was 2016?
Would be the year
before
Luck got hurt.
Yeah. So, but to that, I hadn't done, I did
they
the study.
They also had Dante Moncrief that year. The year he had 8 touchdowns.
True. So I did the study running into that season. So at the time, the sample was offenses like the Eagles when they had traded all their players except Jordan Matthews, and like Jordan Matthews was their lead receiver as a big slot. A team like the frickin' Dolphins running through Jarvis Landry. The Packers when Jordy Nelson went down and Cobb was the number one receiver. So, I mean, I don't think I think intuitively, yeah, it's tough to run an offense through of just a middle of the field player when you don't have an outside coverage dictator. So intuitively, yeah, I think it, along with the fact that, yes, it's a small sample, but intuitively it does make sense that a player of this ilk is a little tougher to run an offense through because you just don't have that explosive element. You know, you don't have a true – because people just aren't – this is actually why it's good for receivers to run out of the slot, because you don't have a lot of teams scheming defensive attention around interior receivers. I mean, while I think that, like, the effect of double coverage is a little bit overrated, I think people talk about it and throw it around more than it actually is used by defensive coordinators and provides an impact on offenses. However, it is beneficial for receivers to run out of the inside on just for an individual basis, not necessarily a whole offense basis, because you're not going to see a lot of like double teams on the inside. You're not going to see a lot of teams scheming to slot or to stop slot receivers. So I think this is obviously good news for Tyler Boyd from a fantasy perspective, because he's going to get more targets. But from a Bengals offense perspective, it's a huge blow.
So do you think he's going to get more targets, though? Because also noted in his per-game targets without A.J. Green, they were down from 8.3 to 7.7. So he's going to have to play to superior defensive attention now. So I guess the question is, do you feel like, or you know what, did you do a Fearless forecast for Boyd today?
I did, and hit I me. Was just going to say, this I can finally say this now that I'm done with them.
In my projections,
I bumped him up to, I had him at probably like a 19 to 20% target share. Now I have him at 22%.
And what's your...
And that's about, he's going to be like 123 targets, 83 catches.
Interesting. I have him, I just did one.
Yeah.
For fun. So 83 catches, what's your yards per reception?
1,056 yards, 7 touchdowns.
So I think we our yards per target, what are you doing at 13 or 14?
Yards per reception?
Yeah.
12.8.
13. So I have him just over 70 targets, 75.
75 targets?
I'm sorry, 75 catches. So this is what I did the other week.
Damn.
75 catches, 1,001 yards, 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, so we're about in the same range.
I think you're a little more optimistic. And I think part of the reason I'm, and I felt like that was a pretty generous.
Yeah, I feel a little generous about that too.
Where do you have him ranked if you were to rank him? I have him at wide receiver 22 and I have Green at wide receiver 36.
See, I think the thing with Boyd is like, so he goes in the same range as guys like
now,
right now.
That's going to catch up.
Actually, he's a little bit later than these guys. He has like a six round ADP, but I'm thinking like he's kind of in that same tier as like potential breakout receivers like DJ Moore, Chris Godwin, Dante Pettis, you know, that type of range. I think, and I said this in my Fearless forecast today, like if it's like a ceiling that you're after, I don't think Boyd's your pick.
Yep.
I think he's a floor guy. I feel really good about that projection, but like my projection Fearless forecast for like DJ Moore is like, I've got him at like 800 yards and 5 touchdowns, but
he could clip
he
that.
He could clip that pretty easily. Chris Godwin, I've got it like 1,076 and 6 to 7 touchdowns. He could easily.
You're good at staying tempered about that. I generally can't. I get too excited.
That's why I love doing projections. Like, look, am I one of the guys that I don't give a shit about this, so like who cares? But I, you know, guys that are like, you know, the super accurate projection guys out there, like I won the Fantasy Pros contest this many times, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't care about that. Like, I'm not the most accurate projector or accurate ranker, but I like doing the exercise so much because it helps you stay tempered.
It's very informative.
Yeah, because you have to actually make everything work out. Like, you can sit there and do like, oh yeah, I'm going to give... Like Bucks offense, perfect example. I'm going to give, you know, Mike Evans 150 targets, 130 to Chris Godwin, 130 to O.J. Howard. And then you pop up on the spreadsheet and you're like, oh, I'm like.
You're going to pass for 7,000 yards.
Yeah. Like, and oh, by the way, I'm like, because the way this one works out is like, it'll just show like, here's your remaining left for the rest of the team. It's like, oh, I'm negative 20. Like, I'm way over.
Oh, Matt has a whole, of course, he has a whole metric grid graph thing. I just have, again. Word document and some keys and a RotoWire magazine, baby.
Yeah.
Wow. You're gonna. Can you show me that later?
This is actually a template that you can download. Shout out to Justin Freeman. He makes these. You can download them on his website.
Oh God.
And
okay.
Like you got to tweak some things to like make it work. But yeah, I'll just send you mine.
So let's talk about the Bengals. Not that we need to. Why are we talking about the Bengals? I guess because this team feels like a fantasy stay away, but there are other pieces that are going to be affected by this waterfall effect. I want to talk about Joe Mixon.
All right.
Here.
Let's talk about Joe Mixon.
I was very high on Joe Mixon last season because I believed in his talent, even though, as you like to say, running back talent doesn't matter.
Well, I was wrong as hell. So, I mean,
about Joe Mixon, but not about the position in terms in relation to the landscape. I'll give you. He's wildly electric, right? Like he even produced behind a bottom 10 run blocking unit. But that unit that was bad last year is even worse this year.
Yeah.
And so while I have a pretty generous projection on Joe Mixon,
yeah,
I start thinking, just hear me out here, right? Because let me workshop this with you. So we know Joe Mixon is an incredibly efficient pass catcher too. Like he's got an incredible catch percentage. But Boyd's getting a promotion to a job he's not suited for.
Yeah.
Not that that ever happens. And then Tyler Eifert is a total question mark in terms of his health, right? How many gruesome highlight injuries are we going to see? Who knows? And we've got this Zach Taylor piece who doesn't have a giant resume, but does come from the McVay coaching tree.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a coaching tree that, while it talks about lots of passing and an up-tempo pace, also relies heavily on a running back.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this awful offensive line. You mm-hmm. made a point last week about how Frank Reich solved the issue with Andrew Luck, and that was the time to throw stat, right? Like, get the ball out fast. So why wouldn't Gio Bernard be in play here a little bit and potentially eat? I mean, he can line up in the slot. He can also run inside in a way that people seem to forget about. Yes, he's been in the league since what, like 2012, I want to say?
Pretty sure I was in college when he got drafted.
Something like that. But he hasn't played a full complement of snaps, so his age is not workhorse running back age.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's available in like...
He's free.
I don't even think he's going drafted. So if I, and this is not a handcuffing issue, but this is a new role. Mixon is going to wear down, especially after all the heroics that he pulled off last year. Why wouldn't you grab Gio Bernard like in the pick before your defense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And also, by the way, it's not a handcuffing situation, but it's because he could maybe have some standalone value.
Right.
But if Mixon does.
Man, here's my other point. Hold on. We talk about what McVay has done with the running back position, and he didn't have the Chris Thompson West player LA because Lance Dunbar got himself hurt and wasn't able to play. So now,
Lance Dunbar.
That was the dude, though. Remember, that was supposed to be Chris Thompson West. And so we've got Zach Taylor, who the only thing we can pin on him is that he's going to try to replicate this offense that he was in. Could Gio Bernard be the Chris Thompson Midwest?
Perhaps so.
Boom.
And he also has the upside of like actually being a runner as a, like where Chris right. Thompson doesn't, Lance Dunbar really doesn't. So that if Mixon does ever go down, you do have you have a huge starting asset in fantasy. So, but I think your point, I guess I'm what I'm getting out of this is that you're probably not drafting Joe Mixon.
But I think Nick Chubb is like the guy that I want all the time.
So I want to play a little this or that with Joe Mixon with you because I have a tough time placing him in my tiers, not rankings, as well. But first, like, because people still, it drives me nuts that people do this, and it doesn't always work out. But like, the fact that people just want to ignore that these running backs could be these garbage offenses, and like, oh, but they're good. Like, it doesn't matter. Of course, it freaking matters.
Well,
like,
his production from last year proved that.
But the Bengals' offense was pretty good last year. I mean, until everyone got hurt. But like early in the season, they were actually a winning team. Until AJ Green gets hurt, until Andy Dalton gets hurt, like until some offensive line injuries happen. But anyways, my point being, like, it was just on my radar because I was at brunch this weekend and a few drinks in, like I saw our fantasy handle tweeted out, here are our running back rankings. And do you still rank Zeke at the top? So I'm like, I'm feeling spicy. Like, let me just throw out, you know, quote tweet, Alvin Kamara should be the first pick in drafts. Bye. And of course, I get all these people like Saquon Barkley, bro. Doesn't matter about the offense. I'm like, you goofballs. Said this about Todd Gurley back in 2016, and you were all dead ass wrong, except me, because...
Yeah, but there's a stacked boxes issue when you're talking specifically about Saquon.
That's what I'm
and
saying.
And when you're talking about Zeke in the holdout, like, nah, I don't know, your hammies different. Get loose when you're partying in Cabo.
That's what I'm just saying, but specifically for the Barkley... people honking about. I like you used honking a lot in Fearless Forecast. So you were really in on that. Okay. But people are honking about Saquon Barkley. Like, oh, it's just he's that good. Whatever. I'm like, yeah, you guys all said this about Todd Gurley in 2016, and like clearly he's freaking good. Saquon Barkley is clearly freaking good. But it matters about offensive efficiency, and I think the same thing can be said for Joe Mixon this year. So point being, I assume you're going Barkley, McCaffrey, Elliott, Kamara, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell all over Joe Mixon.
Do it again.
Barkley, McCaffrey, Elliott, Kamara, David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell. I'm assuming all of those are
gone. Ahead I don't of Joe have Mixon. Them ranked in that order, but right. fine. They're all
yeah. I'm just reading off ADP.
Yeah.
James Conner or Joe Mixon?
Neither.
Okay.
Receiver.
But just pick one or the other.
I have to pick one? Yeah, I can't just draft a receiver right there?
No, no, no. I'm just saying, like, you're in your rankings.
I would probably pick Mixon.
Okay. What about, because I know you're not that high on James Conner. What about Todd Gurley or Joe Mixon?
Joe Mixon.
What about Dalvin Cook or Joe Mixon?
Dalvin Cook.
Nick Chubb.
Nick Chubb.
Damien Williams.
Damien Williams is tough because that bro's already a little bit dinged, but I love what he could do in a Pat Mahomes offense. Like that just, I'd probably go Mixon.
Melvin Gordon?
Melvin Gordon.
Aaron Jones?
Mixon.
All right, cool. So I think I see where the dividing line is here. He's still a running back one candidate, but yeah, I feel about the same way.
I mean, the point is that like I'm not going to draft him because I'm going to pivot to another position.
Cool.
But, and my projection for him is massive. It's stupid.
Same
massive.
Here, yeah, I know.
But I can't not, I guess the Gio Bernard issue is that I think that this offense might be able to support both of these running backs in PPR formats.
Yep. Makes sense.
You want to talk at all about your boy Stanley Morgan or should we move on?
I mean,
hold that nug for another moment.
It sounds like we're pretty much avoiding everything that's going on with the Bengals. So I don't, I liked Stanley Morgan as a draft prospect. I hope he makes the team, but I don't think I'm going to be paying too much attention.
True story. Very late one evening, Matt texted me and he was like, you should totally watch Stanley Morgan's tape. You're going to love him. So I did. And I have notes on him.
You want to drop the nug?
No.
Neither.
I mean, we should save the nug for like when Tyler Boyd goes down and then call him up off the sofa.
And then he goes and catches like three passes for
38
yards.
Who'd you comp him to, though? Just to give the folks at home an idea.
Damn. I don't even remember.
I wrote Deshaun Hamilton with a question mark and slightly less dynamic / explosive / fluid Victor Cruz.
Give me a minute. And I can tell you, but yeah.
Here's a fun fact about him while Matt finds that. He's from New Orleans and he has an American bulldog named Lil Easy Anna. Three words, Lil Easy Anna, like Louisiana. He got her from a shelter. She's cute.
I wrote Stanley Morgan, but I typed Stanley Moran and then Matt Harmon into Google. And I got a lot of mugshots. So I don't know what kind of a sign that is. But it can't possibly be good, right? Oh, Willie Snead.
Oh, you wrote Willie Snead. Okay. So we're not at all.
I mean,
the
Deshaun
same.
Hamilton, Willie Snead, that's kind of the same archetype.
Yeah. I don't know why I was on a Victor Cruz kick. Theo Riddick was cut by the Lions. He's reportedly deciding between the Saints and the Broncos. Do we care?
It's huge for Kerryon Johnson, but I think we all expected this to happen.
Correct.
Like in my latest Drumbeats notebook from last week, Kerryon Johnson was the lead. And I think there's been a lot of good buzz about old Kerryon. I hadn't really been all that high on him, but they're going to run the ball a lot. And like if he's got access to all the receiving work, that's great.
Boom.
But I could not care less where
Theo Riddick lands.
Yeah.
Shut it all down, Derrick Henry.
Nah, we're fine.
Oh, you think so?
Nah, we're fine. They're not worried. Titans aren't worried. The tough
that is, by the way, like a compass that you should follow, whether or not the temperature in Tennessee is hot.
The tough part is the Titans are like not very, they're like the least forthcoming team in the NFL about injuries.
Yeah, because they're like a Patriots-esque team.
Cute, Tennessee.
So according to Schefter, the injury could sideline him for a couple of weeks, but it's not considered serious.
Not considered serious, Liv. It's not that serious.
It's a calf strain. I don't know. I owned Leonard Fournette last year. That wasn't fun. Excuse me.
We're going to be all right.
You're going to be all right?
Leading the league in touchdowns. Derrick Henry.
Are you thinking at all about Deion Lewis? Similar philosophy. Hold on.
I love Deion Lewis.
Similar thought to the Gio Bernard situation, except Taylor Lewan obviously out for a month despite this really adorable plea. you've got Marcus Mariota, who's not missed a leg day, but too bad the nerve damage was in his elbow. You got to get this ball out fast. Like,
Liz, you're on fire right now.
I don't know. AJ Brown came up lame first day of training practice. Delanie Walker, like, may not be ready for week one. Jonnu Smith, who was drafted to replace Delanie Walker, he's on the PUP list.
I thought we got good news about Delanie Walker.
I mean, he's out there, like, running between cones, but, like, we all seen that. He's 35 years old. And according to Matt Harmon, that is old.
That's not that old.
It's 7.5 years older than you.
That's true.
And also, this whole offense is going to be Corey Davis and Adam Humphries and Derrick Henry on a lame ass calf.
You asked in the control room today when I was sitting in there, I was like, there any news?
Hit me with some Richie Incognito shit, I am going to punch you.
No. Oh, okay. Why would I say that?
Because he's 36.
Oh, no. If there's any new. Oh, man. One of the all-time great moments right there. But you asked, is there any news I need to know, like, that would affect Fearless Forecast that, like, just happened in the last couple hours? And I was like, and then I said, ah, nah, or whatever. And then right after producer Jackie cut the mic, I said, actually, well, there was one nug that Marcus Mariota apparently really loves Corey Davis's body language, but I don't think she's talking Corey Davis. So there you go. Corey Davis breakout, baby. Body language. But the problem is, the only reason I mean, Deion Lewis, yeah, like if Derrick Henry went down, he'd be a great fantasy pick. But
there's who else is going to be his security blanket?
But I don't I have the Titans projections for the lowest pass attempts in the NFL. So I'm just not really jazzed about the pass catching back on a team like that.
All right, fine. I mean, he did evade 62 tackles last year.
Yeah, he's good.
Had a catch Deion's rate. Always been best good. Catch rate among running backs, 88%.
Deion's so. Freaking amazing. He's a good player. I wish he didn't play in Tennessee.
Yeah, true that. Tyreek Hill has a quad bruise. And our own Kimberly Martin, who's at Chiefs training camp right now, live tweeted the injury as Hill was being carted off the field. And by carted off, I mean driven away in a golf cart. So everyone, you can take some big breaths because it looks like Hill is going to escape something catastrophic again.
Carts get kind of, they're kind of like got a bad name. You know, anytime you hear cart on Twitter, like guy got carted off, it's like, yeah, you're just riding a golf cart off. You know right. What I mean? Like we don't all have to hate golf carts. I crashed a golf cart one time.
Not
when
surprised.
I was a kid. It was kind of my sister's fault, but it's a longer story for another day. I don't think there's nothing to really say about Tyreek Hill, right? I mean.
No. Just a nug telling everybody to chill out.
Chill out.
Matt.
Yes.
You like talking about drum beats. So would you like to have the floor and rap, tap, tap? I don't know if you're supposed to do that.
Probably not. Drum beats. Yeah, I got the latest installment of Drum Beats Notebook coming out tomorrow. Feels like we might have to finally talk about Curtis Samuel. I've resisted for two.
No, we've been talking about him since April.
In the Drum Beats article, though, Liz, I've resisted discussing Curtis Samuel the last 2 weeks, but it's been a blast being on Twitter every day and just getting constant updates about how he's just crushing it in training camp and the drum beat. Just he's the perfect drum beats player because A, he's good. B, there's like nothing not to like about Curtis Samuel this year. I mean, he produced when given opportunity last year, even as the offense was falling apart around Cam Newton's bum shoulder. Cam's throwing in camp. We're good on that for the time being. Also, this offense is more stacked than ever before, so it's good news. The offensive efficiency is up. He's a clear starter. They can't stop posting about Curtis Samuel.
Norv,
on the damn
pants. Lots of hot takes.
Norv's calling him a great route runner. You're seeing him just crushing people with routes in camp, which is exactly what he does on the field. Oh, by the way, I mean, there's nothing but positive news about Curtis Samuel, so the haters can get out of here.
I don't think there are any haters.
Oh, no, there are still haters, trust me.
Really?
Yes.
Because every tweet I see is Matt quote tweeting some beat writer or Norv Turner singing Samuel's praises with either a cigarette emoji or retweeting somebody who has said, well, thanks, Norv, but I knew this because I bought the reception perception kit from Matt Harmon. And it is so awesome.
Yeah, isn't
it? It's great.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything
is
coming
together.
I mean, it
must feel just delicious.
When he goes out there and crushes it on the field, that's all that really matters. It's all about what happens on Sundays, Liz. So yeah, Curtis Samuel, it's going to be great. Perfect drum beats player. But there are other...
What's this Jordan Howard news I'm hearing? I mean, there does seem to be like Miles Sanders has this theoretical dual skill set. He's looked like the real deal. It feels like every report is talking up Miles Sanders, the second round pick. So that makes sense. But Jordan Howard is still...
taking first team reps.
Being the man.
I don't have a good feeling about this Eagles backfield at all. So my original read, I think this is where I still stand, is that I think Howard's a pretty good best ball pick because he goes in that gross range of running backs where you're looking at, you know, like the round 7-ish area where there's just not a lot of appealing picks. Howard goes around that range and I find him to be like, he's got a good weekly ceiling, right? Because he's probably going to have goal line work. This is a good offense. Touchdowns should be there. But I ain't trying to predict like when he's going to be popping in that end zone, you know? So for best ball, cool. My read on Miles Sanders has been that he's a guy I probably don't want to draft, but I want to try to acquire midseason because he might take that backfield over. But this is one where I don't think the drum beat out of camp has not been clear. You've got some people like Brad Evans dancing down your timeline about Jordan Howard. And then you've got like Adam Levitan is tweeting all these articles about how people are clearly saying like Miles Sanders is crushing it. He's going to be taking over this backfield. So it's like, I don't think the drum beat has been clear on this one. I don't know where I stand.
And also, And I think you've made this point before. I think you and I have talked about this offline years ago. Where a player starts week one may not be where they end up, not because of injury, but just because of usage and circumstance, particularly usage, actually, by the middle of the season. And so your take can be half right.
Like, oh, you can be, I think Sigmund Bloom says this, you can be right and wrong about a player within one season.
Yeah.
And this was a point that, like, I made to people last year, like, people honking in my mentions about, remember when you didn't like Aaron Jones and now Aaron Jones is crushing at the end of the season? It's like, and same people would say this about Nick Chubb too, because I wasn't drafting Nick Chubb at all either. And you didn't like Nick Chubb and he's crushing at the end of the season. It's like, yeah, jokers. Like, I actually have a lot of these guys on my team now. I didn't draft them, but when you idiots went out and drafted them early and then dropped them, right, or were giving them away for peanuts to get them off your roster, that's when you go and acquire them. And that's the type of player I think that, who the hell are we talking, Miles Sanders could be.
Do you have any other drumbeat players you'd like to discuss?
I mean, I think Tevin Coleman is like the back to own for sure in San Francisco. And I'm getting more and more convinced of that as the weeks go on.
Well, McKinnon's hurt again. I mean, I guess he's practicing again, but that just seems like a recycle. Rewash, reuse, recycle storyline.
Yeah, like projecting the 49ers backfield, it's pretty clear. Like, that's...
No, thanks.
Well, I don't
get paid enough. Not to project that backfield. No, thank you.
That's fair. That is fair enough. But yeah, I think this week, like, there's a lot more, like, smaller nuggets to go around. You know, I think it's...
What about Kalen Ballage?
Thank you. I was, like, thinking... I'm trying to stall in my head, like, who the hell did I write about last
You're
week?
You're welcome. But I'm in there.
Thank you. Kalen Ballage... That's a real thing, right?
I mean, this will not shock you, but I fell in love with him while watching the Senior Bowl.
With Liz and Dave Gettleman up there, just watching the Senior Bowl, kicking back.
I love the Senior Bowl, me and John Elway. So, yeah, Kenyon Drake, I was never a buyer of, because when people last year were drafting him so high, they were doing it after basically the month of December, mm-hmm. right? Like, they were drafting him off of December of 2017. That wasn't a big enough sample size to me to believe that he was an every down back, especially not in an offense that Adam Gase was going to at the time helm. I don't think that Kenyon Drake, despite the miracle at Miami play that he made against the Patriots last year, is somebody who can handle every down. And I have always liked Kalen Ballage. Like, he's a big time
athlete.
Right. But that's the issue. Like, athleticism versus college production.
Yeah.
That was the knock.
I mean, he was like not even really the starter at Arizona State or whatever, but big time athlete. The Dolphins are theoretically a wide open offense. And yeah, I mean, Kenyon Drake, like, here's the thing. I, for a while, have really wanted to hold on to that end of season in 2017 where he had like a couple of like workhorse games. Where he, I mean, that
was the one we're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
That was awesome. But also, like, every coaching staff he's played under, if we want to now count this one too, has decided, and going back to Alabama, has decided this guy is a part-time player.
This is the Lamar Miller 2.0 story.
I think it really is. And even Adam Gase, who gave him that workload at the end of that 2017 season, didn't want to do it because after they traded away Jay Ajayi's, you know, what is dead may never die. Damian Williams was the guy who they wanted to, like, kind of be the starter, and then he got hurt.
And the knock against him was that he was a tiptoeer, that he couldn't, like, plant his foot and go.
Yeah, so Ballage, I think, and plus, like, he's, again, totally free. When I wrote the Drumbeat article last week, he's, like, running back 56 ADP. It's like, yeah, just draft that in the
Grab
end, because who cares? And also, it's not another drumbeat, is that Fitzpatrick is like gonna be the dude in Miami. That's gonna make this offense more fun, fantasy friendly, than if Josh Rosen was out there. So that's one. Another drumbeat that I do want to talk about that I think is mean in this week's article, once I actually write it.
There are a lot to write this week.
Miles Boykin. Miles Boykin's getting some pop
Let's hit a pause. Let's hit a pause.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about Boykin yet, because you and I have very different feelings about Lamar Jackson, and I think we should save that for a larger conversation. But we will, as the pros say, tease it right now.
And I'm going to write about it for Friday, so yeah.
So we'll have more to talk about that Matt has written next week.
Lovely.
Great. This weekend, I don't know if any of you know, Brett probably does, but there was a giant movie that Quentin Tarantino that he directed. Did he produce it too?
Oh, he's got his hands in all parts of the filmmaking process.
And Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean, it's like the band got back together. Like,
there were feet in it.
I definitely did not see this movie. Brad Pitt was in it. It was like basically all of the Gen X heartthrobs, I think. Gen X heartthrobs, aren't those
just two of them?
Well, that, I mean, who was a bigger heartthrob? They're old to me. Like,
Leo's
a
multi-generational heartthrob. Let's just say that.
Well, that's because he only dates like 22-year-olds.
Multi-generational, indeed.
He looks so bloated. I mean, I'm sorry.
Leo does?
Yes. He looks bloated. His face doesn't look good.
Well, he's older now, right?
That's the problem when you have like that sexy baby face. Those dudes don't age well.
Yeah.
44 like, years old.
Oh, he's not as... I thought he was 50. I'm going to be honest.
I figured he probably had to be in his 40s.
And how old is Brad Pitt?
He's got
me in his 50s.
He's
got
to be 50s,
yeah, because
right?
Jen... Oh, girl.
55.
He's 50. Okay, I take it back. He looks good for 55.
He looks fantastic in this film. And give him the... Like, there is something about watching this movie where you're watching Brad Pitt in a Hawaiian shirt drive down Hollywood Boulevard in the 70s and the music playing and you could feel the air. Oh, just it's movies. You're like, oh, wow, this is a movie.
Yeah, I've always been more of a TV person than a movie person.
Me too, yeah. 100%.
I don't think I have the attention span for a movie.
Liz, this is we are so aligned on this. And like some of my very movie-loving friends like Alex Gelhar hate it when I say this because it admittedly doesn't make a lot of sense.
I cannot sit still for like 90 minutes to 2 hours.
Like, you know, that's why I'm like, see, this is the thing. Like, man, you know, at TV shows, I can tap out anytime once. I can sit around for 90 minutes. Plus, like, most movies now are like 2.5 hours.
Hours? What is this?
Well, this one was 2:45.
All right. See, this is what I'm saying.
Pass.
Like, give me a break. I can't sit around for that long. I got stuff to do. And then I say that. So I'm like, TV shows, I can pop out anytime I want. And then, of course, the natural retort for Alex who lived
binge them.
Yo, cool. I've seen you watch an entire season of New Girl in like a weekend, bro.
Oh,
so,
that show is so good.
Yeah. So,
I was on a plane recently and I heard this stat that people enjoy films on airplanes better than anywhere else. And I was and I was like, huh, that's true. Like, I mean, the film that I watched on the airplane was the Rebel Wilson film. It Isn't Romance. And I was crying. Like, I'm not like a teary person, I don't think. But I was like crying. I was like, yes, she's going to find love. And I wish I had like fat heroines when I was a kid to watch, like the whole thing. I was in it. And then I saw this thing on Reddit the next day that said the reason people enjoy movies on planes more is because of oxygen deprivation. So you're like more willing to engage and be emotional.
I thought it would just be that you don't have anywhere else to go.
No, but isn't that fascinating?
That is
I definitely like went to the bathroom too and was like, Anyway, back to the point. So Matt and I both moved from our respective homes, Matt in Virginia, me in Illinois, to Hollywood to create our fame and fortune. And we've done a moderate job at that.
Some people know us and we've got...
Most people don't.
And we're... Some people know us, most people don't. And we're making solid money for what we would have thought where our lives would have been. At least me, at least.
In this voyage, we have some Hollywood stories. And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood has kind of birthed this idea. I'm going to tell... Are you going to tell a story?
Sure.
All right. By the way, I've already told my room story.
I know. I was going to say my story has to do with Tommy Wiseau. So like
we're going to tell our Once Upon a Time in Hollywood stories and then tie them into fantasy football somehow.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dad.
So, Dad, do you want me to go first?
Yes.
Okay. So I have a couple. I'm going to tell this one. The boys already know about it. But when was this? This was a couple years ago, 4 years ago, I want to say. I was on my way, so I was going to do my first episode of Fantasy Football Live as a member of the Yahoo cast, first ever, but I also got an offer to do this event at Soldier Field with Aaron Andrews. And that, so our boss Jason said that I could do the episode of Fantasy Football Live out of the Chicago office with Andy by my side. And I was very, very nervous, like had watched Fantasy Football Live as a fan and was like, oh my gosh. And then when I got the extra money for this Aaron Andrews event at Soldier Field, I was like, well, I'll take my son, who was 2 at the time. He just turned 2. And I was like, yeah, because then I can stay at my mom's house and see the family and like bring my son with. And so I, a 2-year-old boy, if any of you have children, like a 2-year-old boy is, to quote Andy Behrens, like having a wind-up toy. Like they just do not sit still. And my son is very, very sweet. But I'm not like a patient person. I don't think you could say. And
pass.
So we were going and I was carrying like the backpacks and the things and the, like, he was still in a pull up and I'm lugging the stuff around and it is because, and it's filled. It's so, oh my God, the airport was so damn packed. And he's, I've got him, I'm holding onto his little baby backpack and he's being very sweet, but I'm sweating. And at one point I'm like near tears because I just couldn't, I feel like a Sherpa. And then there's a throng of people as we're at the terminal near the gate and they're all lining up to board. So you know how like everyone like congregates in the middle. And he at that moment like sees something and wriggles out of my grip and
it's
runs.
It's like the beginning of Jerry Maguire.
Is
the
it?
Kid runs away in the airport.
I don't
Jerry,
remember.
Jerry finds him. Oh, I watched it recently.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. You had to. So this little two-year-old, this little toe-headed, adorable two-year-old like wriggles through these people's legs and I am completely panicked. Like I cannot see him. Feeling like the worst mother on the planet. Why did I make this choice not to have a kid, but to bring him along on the flight? And so I just drop all the luggage and I burst after. I was like the tiniest, fastest blonde bullet you'd ever seen. And I burst through this like group of people. And then I see him on the other side. And there is this rather sculpted man, like on his knees, like talking to him. And I realize, and I don't care who it is. And I just like, I'm like, Paxton, come here. You don't run away from mommy. Oh my God. And I'm hysterical. And I look into this man's rather sumptuous eyes and realize that it's Ryan Phillippe. And I was like, oh, hi. Oh my God. Thank you for saving my son. And he was like, no, I have kids of my own. I totally get it. Boys are maniacs. He reminds me of my son, blah, 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 blah. I thank him. He like picks up Pax, puts him in my arms. And I'm also like mostly upset about my kid and like trying to recover from that moment. But then being like, did Reese Witherspoon's husband just, was he my hero? Did he just like save me and my child? And then, you know, I had to like recover all the baggage. So I say that because I was then wondering who is going to be this year's fantasy hero, the one you don't expect to show up in that big moment, the one whose reputation maybe isn't in alignment with saving and rescuing, but could be. And I have, write this name down for your damn drum beats notebook, Maurice Harris. Boom! I don't care!
No,
I don't care!
No, no.
I will task you, Matt Harmon. You made me watch or encouraged me to just shut up for a second to watch the Stanley Morgan tape. Go back and watch the Washington football team's week 9 game against the Minnesota Vikings in 2017. And you tell me that this kid's hands aren't great. You tell me that he does not put together clean routes. You tell me that he can't win contested catches. You will also tell me that he is sluggish when he turns up field and that he is definitely thinking too much after the catch and that he is going to get clotheslined real quick. But when he is working one-on-one with Tom Brady on the sidelines, I think maybe some of that can be coached out of him. When I am hearing that he is working with the ones ahead of first-round draft pick from this year, N'Keal Harry, I'm listening. When I think about the fact that he is a versatile player who can play inside and outside, I'm paying attention. What are the Patriots famous for? Taking somebody else's trash and turning it into a goddamn treasure. I GD'd it. I'm in. He is free. Throw your darts. That was impassioned.
It was impassioned. Speaking of Hollywood, great, great scene right there for Liz Loza. But I don't know about that.
Go watch the game.
I got a lot of stuff going on.
Watch the game.
You know, I got a lot of things. Got a lot of receivers out there I'd like to watch. We'll see.
When this one's... Oh, I can't wait till he shows up. Brett, do you have a Hollywood story?
I sure do.
I would love to hear it.
This is a real Hollywood story.
Oh, well, all right.
This takes place at the Chateau Marmont.
Oh, that's a place in Hollywood.
Now. I was going to say what?
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's not in the bubble.
Yeah. Anyone who's anyone has died at the Chateau Marmont.
Died or dined?
I think John Belushi died at the Hotel Marmont. At the Chateau. So I'm there with some friends and a television star who I will not name.
Oh, I just named
two television stars who I shall not name. But because they're not part of the story, I go out. A friend wants to have a cigarette. I don't want a cigarette, but I'll hang out with the friend on the patio.
You are great like
I
that.
I sit down on the bench. There's a bench in this little patio. There's not many benches. There's like two or three. They're all taken. There's one empty one. I sit down with my friend to have a cigarette. And who should appear but the nerdy guy from the Black Keys, Patrick Carney, the guy with glasses from the Black Keys. We have, okay, you're too old. And you're too young to know who the Black Keys
Dude,
are.
I know who the Black Keys are.
Give me a break.
I just don't think I'd recognize them.
Well, you'd recognize this one. He's the recognizable one. He's the one with the nerdy looking face. Anyways, he's like, he points at me and my friend and he says, can I sit there? And I say, no. Because it's a two-seater bench. It was more like.
You big timed
it? It was more like, get up.
Oh.
I'm going to sit there. So that was his tone. I don't know what he said in the moment. And I said, no. And he's like, and he pulled a, do you know who I am on me?
I mean, I pulled that at the Whole Foods, but.
Boom.
Yeah, I mean, do they?
Liz pulls that on me.
So he pulled a, do you know who I am on me for a bench at a, on a smoking patio. And I said, no. And he got testy. His wife had to come in and apologize.
Wow.
So to bring this to fantasy, I have taken some of the advice that you've given on this very episode, Matt, about players who scream, do you know who I am?
Yes.
I'm saying this because I don't think anybody in my fantasy league listens to this podcast, but I am attempting to trade in a auction keeper league Saquon Barkley.
All right.
Because
this for a while, folks. Mm-hmm.
I've almost completed the deal.
Thanks for sharing your your fantasy podcast that you produce with your fantasy league mates. By the way,
they know I work here.
Thanks for listening.
They can listen.
Brett's
listening. Thanks for listening, friends. Ryan, please email me to complete the deal. Anyways, I've been taking your advice to heart. When a player's like, "Do you know who I am? I must sit here on your fantasy team." I'm not buying it. He's going to cost a lot of money to get, you know, 8-9 in the box against them all year. And I'm not going to sit through that. And I'm going to invest in other players.
Snaps.
What's your fantasy story? What's your Hollywood story?
So
that is also a fantasy lesson, Matt.
Yeah, I haven't really quite got to the fantasy part of it yet. But the one of the very few Hollywood encounters I have here, and this was last summer. I went to, some of you will know, my favorite band is Dawes. The lead singer is married to Mandy Moore. When I was at, they were playing a free show at the Amoeba record store in Hollywood.
Do you know what a record is, Mike?
Yeah. It's one of those little spinny things that makes the...
I mean, I don't even know, so...
Yeah, people are like, you look like you would be a record guy. I'm like, come on, give me a break. Like, just put the freaking Spotify on and one of the Bluetooth speakers. It's a little more. Yeah, I got.
So you were at the Amoeba.
Yeah, at the Amoeba.
On Sunset.
But I do have the record of their most recent album, because if you went and bought the record there, you could meet the band and they would sign it. And this was like a religious experience for me. But of course, the story is not about these four goofballs that are in this band. As I'm walking to get backstage to meet the band and get the record signed, a figure emerges.
A specter.
A specter emerges, and, you know, I'm going through the basic line, and this person's going through the express line, and I almost barrel into Mandy Moore, like complete knock her over, and she looks at me and goes, "Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry that I was in your way." And I was like, "Yo, like, Mandy, I'm in your way, all right? Like, let's be clear. I'm the schlub in this situation. So, like, also, this is us. Great show. Blah, blah, blah." Didn't say that. I think what I actually did was like, "Well, it's fine." So I think.
How'd she look?
Straight.
She's 35. Just want to say it.
Oh, no. I mean, she looks great. She looks fantastic.
Good.
Fantastic for 35 years old. Just purely fantastic.
I hear lovely things about her.
She seems super nice. And I would like to believe that, you know, I mean, Taylor Goldsmith's writing, the lead singer of Dawes, is incredible. And I think, you know, a man of him, his writing, you know, it's mostly sad, tragic stuff, but it's taken a much more pleasant turn because he's in love now. He doesn't have to be as tragic and miserable anymore. And it's, that's a great feeling.
So which fantasy players are allowing you to not be so tragic and miserable, Matt?
You know, that's the great question, because they're all making me pretty miserable at some point or another. I think that when you look at the running back landscape, someone that in previous years I've never really been in on, I think most people are kind of leaving for dead, because I would say that Mandy Moore's kind of had like a career renaissance, you know.
She's had that careers.
Ryan Adams, right?
Yeah.
Screw you, Ryan. She's with the real man now. And I think that that Mark Ingram is with a real team now in Baltimore that wants to. I'm just becoming more and more excited about this Ravens offense. I don't know how it's going to look, but I know that there's a lot of ways that it can look really fun. And I find myself hammering Mark Ingram in the fourth round in drafts.
How are your feelings about Justice Hill?
Like, I almost hammered into Mandy Moore in this damn record store, barreled her right over. I think Mark Ingram would be barreling over opposing defenses in 2019. Now, that's an interesting point about Justice Hill, who I'm also really high on. I think he could play a role, and I actually just think, you know, there's been a lot of yapping out of Ravens camp of just like Mark Ingram himself has said, like, there's so many different run plays in this in this playbook. And I just think like the combination of Lamar Jackson back there, who I think is the most enthralling runner since Michael Vick that we've seen in the
NFL.
That's
a pretty standard take right now. I mean, that is what everybody is saying.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, like,
I'm not saying that to disparage your take. I'm just saying that is common knowledge.
Right. Like, I remember watching. Because it was one, like, you could watch him in college and be like, damn, this guy is an unbelievable runner. But then, like, I think it was his second start was against the Bengals. Second start was against the Falcons. And, like, you know, everybody's like, oh, he's just running too much. I'm like, yeah, he's running too much. But, like, man, watching him run in that game, I was like, this is something really special. He's a special runner. Passing, we'll see. But Ingram, I think, fits really well. I think Justice Hill brings like a great explosive element. Everybody's favorite boy, Kenneth Dixon, is still there. I mean, he'll probably get cut, so who cares? But
Gus Edwards is still there.
And like Lamar Jackson, his threat as a runner turned like Gus Edwards into like a top five freaking fantasy back. Like, what can Mark Ingram do in this system? I just find myself more and more like excited about this. I mean, Mark Ingram's not really having a renaissance. Like, I don't know if Mandy Moore's like having a renaissance, but, you know, I think the second acts of their career could be even more enthralling than the first.
Well done, Matt. Thank you for pulling that all together. You guys, if you haven't guessed, right, football season's here. Training camps are open. Everyone's got their summer season bodies going. It's great, but
I don't know about that.
Starting Tuesday.
Playing his way into shape.
I'm playing my way into shape. I was in good shape before I left for vacation. Now I'm in all right shape.
Starting Tuesday, we will return to twice a week pods. Tuesdays and Fridays are when they will post. I believe we have some special guests to ring in the occasion on Tuesday the 6th, so be sure to keep an eye out for that.
Can we say it?
Yeah.
I mean, you've already tweeted it, Matt.
Right, but not everybody that, you know, the trillions of listeners that we get on this podcast don't all follow me on Twitter.
They should, though.
They should, at @MattHarmon_BYB on Twitter and Instagram. At @LizLoza_FF on Twitter and Instagram. But I did tweet earlier this week that we are going to have the fantasy footballers on our next show.
Indeed.
Andy, Mike, and Jason, they will all be in studio. There will be some video content coming out as well. I don't think, is it going to post before the damn live stream tomorrow?
Questionable.
Well, hey, if you missed it, go to @YahooFantasy. We're going to have the live stream up, whole video show of Liz and those three goofballs all talking.
Liz and...
But on Tuesday, we'll be reposting the live stream on our YouTube page.
Oh, yeah.
YouTube.com/YahooSports.
While you're waiting for our next episode to drop, if anything comes up, you've got questions about fantasy football, marriage, dogs,
losing
your children at the airport, potentially falling in love momentarily with Ryan Phillippe, whatever it might be, call our voicemail line at 888-85-YAHOO, 888-85-YAHOO. I don't know why I always spell it out, but I do. And Matt, you still got a podcast going on.
Rookie Orientation. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts this week. Brett and I are fighting about which episode we're going to have this week, but we'll see what comes up. Right now, this week, we have Dwayne Haskins and got a lot of wordy guests on there, but it was an interesting episode.
I'm doing it on the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Terrez Paylor was calling from D.C., the D.C. area, where he was talking about how Haskins could take the starting job this summer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, give me a break.
Likely the schedule's a little rough in September, but probably be
Flowers protecting the blind side, man.
That's it.
How have the Texans not? Well, I know how, because they don't have a GM.
Well, you saw the Washington like completely disrespected Trent Williams, and now he's like, sorry, you won't pay me, and you're not nice to me, Fangul.
That's what I'm saying.
Flowers, the turnstile, is going to kill your rookie franchise player.
Your non-mobile franchise QB.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Drake Quinn, baby.
Nick Foles. I did see someone, my buddy Charles McDonald, who's on some of the Rookie Orientation episodes, actually, from SB Nation. He said, he's like, Josh Doctson had an incredible practice. Like, he's had a couple of incredible practices. I'm like, woof. Not again.
If that's your standout. But this episode, clearly a standout of ours. We're ranging into form. You can follow me on Twitter at LizLowes_FF. You can follow this guy at Mount Harmon_BYB. And you can also follow Yahoo at Yahoo Fantasy. Bye.